episode 140 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded July 13th, 2017. Bloodsuckers. All right, guys, welcome to the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Les.
I'm Randy. We're jumping right in.
We're just jumping in with the intros this week.
You didn't want a bunch of my bullshit? Is that what it was?
I'm sorry, did I interrupt your bullshit?
No, I didn't have anything to go with this week. But usually I say something stupid, we talk about that for 2 minutes. Sometimes it's Olive Garden. So we're probably best to just go to introductions.
Shit, if I missed out on another Olive Garden rant from
you. If you say it a third time, we have to talk about it.
No, if you say it a third time, a guy shows up with breadsticks. He's in a really offensive Italian stereotype costume.
Oh, my God. I am so tempted now.
Yeah, but then you have to eat them all.
Oh, while
all of them while he watches you.
He watches, and it's kind of creepy.
Yep.
I don't chew. I take a breadstick. I shove it right down my throat.
He watches it. Yes,
this is on YouTube.
Eat the breadsticks. Yes. That's what he says the whole time you're eating them.
Eat my breadsticks.
Yes, the whole time.
Like, sir. I will.
It's not of Olive Garden. I don't know where you guys are eating, but
this was their failed mascot campaign. You know how McDonald's has their whole lineup. The Olive Garden had they had their Italian chef.
They reached out to us.
They had a man. They had one called The Lover. And he was just a man who brought dates to the Olive Garden, and he was the Italian lover. They had a man who didn't know how to balance checkbooks. No, that's the Greeks. That was the Greek restaurant.
That was the Greeks.
They had a man who loved wine. There was a wine monster, kind of like Grimace, but he was shaped like a bottle of wine. And at the end of every short, he would break his own head open and threaten to cut people.
It was cocaine wine. He was a maniac.
That was his name, the Maniac.
Cocaine
the Maniac,
auntie.
The Lover, and the Chef. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have to go and change the title of this episode now. Great. All right, guys. This week, we titled this Bloodsuckers because, A, Randy hadn't come up with this much better name. And, B, these are a bunch of vampires and just parasites of human beings on these shows. We're finally going to get around to talking about Silicon Valley and Veep, the wrap-ups of these most recent seasons. We're also going to check out the second in a series of, I guess, Andy Samberg movies that he's been making over on HBO. But they're like mini-movies.
Mini-movies, but they're thematically – I mean, the Emmys are going to call them a mini-series or something, so you know.
And this is Tour de Pharmacy, which is a mockumentary sports behind the scenes about biking.
People need to know about this.
Cycling, I guess.
Yes.
And then we're going to check out the 4 episodes that just dropped on Netflix of Castlevania before wrapping this up with 4 episodes in on Preacher as well.
I didn't realize we were 4 episodes in on Preacher, by the way. That was longer than I thought we were going to have.
Yeah, we had to do a little bit of catch up there.
Yeah.
But before we get into all of that, guys, iTunes. If you guys go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, not 4, not 3, not 2, definitely not 1.
Definitely not 1.
Give us that whole 5-star rating, and you guys write a little review. We'll read it here on that show.
It's true.
This show, rather. And we actually got one. We got one this week. This one comes to us from Tris Craig, who wrote, the title is, Made Me Look at TV Totally Differently.
Upside Down in Gravity Boots.
Totally worth it. He loves it. Very lightheaded, though. He says, I really love listening to this podcast while I'm working on my summer assignment for school. The discussions are insightful, humorous, witty, and most of the time analytical. In fact, after your recent podcast, I watched all the episodes of GLOW in one sitting. Anyways, keep up the good work. Thank you, Tris Craig. We appreciate
that. Yeah.
And GLOW, that's a show I had to do that too.
Yeah, GLOW. GLOW, you're welcome. You made that happen. Boom. Fan.
Once again, if you guys go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. Helps us out. Another way to help us out is go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. What is that? You give us like $1 or $2 or $10. We've had a couple people give us $20 an episode. That didn't last very long because they went, oh, that's I'm giving a lot of money, I think.
Let's be honest. We're not $20 an episode worthy here. We can maybe fake five, but we're not $20 an episode worthy. But unless you tune in for Olive Garden discussions, we are the preeminent Olive Garden podcast on the internet.
There's not a lot of them out there. In fact, none, I think. So we're kind of the best and the worst. It's a double-edged sword.
Is it time to announce my summer project?
Holy shit. Yes.
Yeah, with the Olive, we're gonna do an episode by episode breakdown of every item on the Olive Garden menu.
Is it called When You're Here, Your Family?
It's yes.
Talking OG.
No, that's
Talking OG.
When You're Here, Your Family is our sign off.
It's perfect. But we have a new patron this week. David Lau joined us, and we want to say thank you so much. And thank you to all of our other patrons that have supported us throughout the years. Guess what we're talking about this week, guys?
What?
We all watched Spider-Man Homecoming, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We gotta talk about it because Randy has got some controversial opinions from what I hear, but I haven't been able to talk to you about this yet. So we're going to get into this because I'm excited to talk about that.
Now, Grant.
Okay. Well, wait, real quick. Patreon.com/TVDudes. And that's it. There's no other way.
No, that's a way in which you can support us with money. But
all right. What do we got?
Because we're doing an episode in which vampires feature in a couple of shows, because we're talking about Olive Garden, as we always do, as we always have. If you go back to the first episode of TV Dudes, it's in there. Subliminal, but it's in there. People could send us garlic to ward off vampires and to make Italian food.
I feel like you've been really soliciting people to send you food lately. You wanted pineapples last time?
Was it pineapples?
I feel like it was pineapples or maybe watermelon.
Maybe I was hungry when we record these things.
I think we are right next to a pizza place that's pretty awesome.
That's true.
Do we need a pizza break?
Yeah, let's take a pizza break.
All right, we're back.
Yep.
We had some pizza.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. And I think we are ready to – no, we're not ready to move on real quick to our listener questions, because I once again want to remind you guys, if you like listening to TV podcasts, you want to expand your horizons beyond just the TV dudes, we're part of a network. It's called the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record. I decided to try a little echoey this time.
That's good.
Try it out.
And this month we are supporting one of our sister podcasts, which is Gilmored. This is our friends Mike and Key. They do a podcast where they talk about the show Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of breaking down some of the best episodes of the earlier seasons. And they did a little recap a little bit ago of the brand new season that came out on Netflix.
I was part of it.
Les was part of it. I don't know. I think it's about women who like coffee.
I've never seen Gilmore Girls, but I got in trouble with my friends when I made fun of it, so I won't make fun of it ever again.
Fair enough. PermanentRCRD.com/Gilmored.
PermanentRCRD.com/Gilmored.
We're trying some stuff out. We're trying it out.
It's good. I like that I'm not going to edit any of this, so it's cool. All right. If you guys like us on Facebook once a week, you can go and ask us questions on our page. And we got a good series of questions here. Our first question we're going to jump to is from Benjamin Hamill, who says, with Michael Mann headed to FX to direct a limited series, what other big-name directors should tackle a TV series next?
I forgot this was happening, by the way, and I'm very excited. Also, the Coen brothers are coming to we don't know what network, but they've got a 6-episode Western show that they're doing.
Yeah.
So, like, big people are coming. So that was my other second answer. But I've got a list of obvious directors, but I'm going to go weird. I'm going to start off with weird.
Okay.
Martin Brest.
I don't even know who Martin Brest is.
He directed Beverly Hills Cop and Midnight Run and then Scent of a Woman. Then he did Meet Joe Black in Geely and was exiled from the industry forever.
Fair enough.
But that guy does really good stuff. I would love to see something along the lines of Midnight Run or Beverly Hills Cop. I think that guy could do something cool on TV.
Redemption.
Yes.
I enjoyed Meet Joe Black. I realize I was in the minority on that. But
never saw it.
Yeah, it's really long.
What are you thinking, Les?
Well, honestly, as soon as you said it, it started me thinking like John Singleton's doing Snowfall. Like there really are a lot of these happening. Randy was saying, I'd completely forgotten the Michael Mann thing. I'd kind of like to see like odd directors go at it. I mean, not obviously David Lynch has made his mark on television, but off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of a director that really impressed me, like Nicholas Winding
Refn.
Yeah, I'd like to see. Whatever show he comes
like
up with.
He's actually doing one
he's
on
got
Amazon.
Or something. Yeah.
He's working on something on Amazon. I mean,
with Ed Brubaker.
Okay, sold.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, like Neon Demon was pointless. But gorgeous. Like, I would like to see what that guy does with a team of television people behind him.
See, I feel like when a director starts off strong and then their sophomore or junior effort goes a little wonky, mm-hmm. then it's time for them to dip their toes in TV to kind of get their stellar groove back. And I was thinking, I want to see some Neil Blomkamp.
Yeah, if TV. He could do it, if he could do a good sci-fi show on TV instead of the big bloated stuff he's been doing, that'd be nice.
Yeah, Elysium didn't work for me, but no. District 9. But
see, I would watch a District 9 show.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of stories to tell there.
Yeah.
From each
yeah.
side.
Well, Alien Nation made the transition from movie to show very effectively. The other thing I think is interesting is that it used to be that TV was sort of the ghetto, and you didn't get a lot of movie directors who were still working as movie directors. That's not true anymore. There's a lot of crossover between the two.
It's not slumming either anymore either. It's actually prestige.
Yeah. What's interesting is that she's not going to do it now, but Patty Jenkins, pre-Wonder Woman, would have been an interesting person to do TV.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder what she would have done. I had a list of a few people, the ones who are probably not going to do TV. Quentin Tarantino. I would love to see what he'd do with a TV show. He's directed like ER and a few other shows.
Here's what's interesting about him. He said that he has a limit on the number of movies he's going to make before he retires.
Yeah.
But what if he just retires from making movies and then does a TV series?
What if he retires to create the ultimate fast food smoothie? Tarantino's.
What is that about?
I'm just guessing. I just think he's going to go a different direction. That's all I say.
Is he going to sell these at Olive Garden?
No. It's going to be a pop-up place throughout the country. It'll probably start in California. Okay. It'll be a little shack. There'll be movie paraphernalia and that kind of thing. And you go and you get a smoothie made by people dressed up as Quentin Tarantino or his characters.
Oh, man. Hmm. That's so much chin and forehead.
Now the conversation with Tarantino in the bathrobe of the coffee right when you walk in, HR has an issue with it. They really took a while to tweak the script on that one.
This is Tarantino's. Did you see a place outside?
Yeah. It's problematic in a lot of places.
By the way, a lot of chin and forehead, that's the number four smoothie.
Now
he actually stirs the milkshake with his chin.
Yes. What are the odds, do you think, of me getting a TV series by directors like the Wachowskis?
It wouldn't happen. I can't see them coming to TV or
like some kind of. I'm seeing some kind of sci-fi thing, like maybe about psychics or something.
You think weird? Think it'd be weird?
Yeah, it'd be weird.
Think there's some gender issues maybe kind of built
sexy,
into it?
Kind of weird. Kind of.
No, yeah. I don't see it. I don't see it happening.
All right.
Real quick, three other names I came up with: Spike Lee, Spike Jones, and Wes Anderson. I would love to see what Wes Anderson.
You
would
threw me off on the last one.
I don't have any Spike. Wes Spike Anderson.
Okay,
that's what he goes by.
Oh, Spike Jones. Yeah. Where has he been? What's the last project
he did? I have no idea.
I missed that guy.
Where the Wild Things Are is the last thing I watched.
That's right.
No, he did Her.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He bought himself some time with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Our next question comes to us from Ulysses Carmona, who says, "Hi, guys. Love the photo of the new studio," which, thanks. We've been posting some pictures. If you guys follow us over on Permanent Record over on Instagram. Mike's been posting a lot of photos of our studios as we've been working on them, modding them up. Right now we have our audio studio pretty good to go. We're obviously recording in it every week now. But we're still working on our second studio, which is going to be an audio/video one. So we're looking forward to that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So, go check that out. But his question is, this weekend will be the first time I am hosting a viewing party for the season premiere of Game of Thrones, which is awesome. It's going to be this weekend.
Is that this Sunday?
Yeah.
All right. I'm jumping in. Can I jump in? Is this a good jump in point?
Yeah, jump in this episode. Don't watch any other episodes.
I'm not going to watch a lick right of it in. Before.
No.
This I'm is just going to watch these eight.
Yes.
This is time. But you could recommend as far – he's looking for recommendations for what you do for hosting a viewing party.
I have no idea. I never invite people over to do that.
I have some suggestions. But first, we're always coming up with great podcast ideas here. We've got some good ones.
Okay.
I have a great one for Les. We have to wait till Game of Thrones is over, and then it's Les watches Game of Thrones in reverse. You start with the season finale, series finale, and you watch every episode in reverse. Yes.
Irregameable.
You memento that shit.
Oh, man. I feel like there's a time travel show that you need to start from the ending and work to the beginning with.
And you just guess at what you think set everything up as you go?
Right? It's just less and less dragons.
less dragons and more characters.
Right?
It's getting really crowded.
Oh, man, that episode where we got back that guy, I love him. Where's he been this whole show?
Okay, ideas for a Game of Thrones watch party. I feel like crank your AC because winter is coming, even though we're in the middle of summer.
Also turn on your fireplace and blast that shit.
Yeah.
Because fiery dragons.
That's true.
So just really confuse your body with the temperature going on in the house.
Spicy foods for the dragons.
Okay.
Ice cream for the you can get some ice cream to represent the White Walkers.
I think a giant wall of mashed potatoes that you can eat.
Yeah, good call.
And stare at and be disgusted by as it just kind of sits there getting cold.
Based on the limited amount I know about the show, if your parents can be having sex in the house while you try to watch it with friends, would that awkwardness kind of fit?
Yes.
That will add some to it. Yeah. Oh, whores. Nakedness and whores. Yes.
I love you going, oh, whores.
Yeah. I mean,
oh, yes. How could I forget?
You should have naked people having sex all around you. And then that's when you can explain the show to other people when that's going on.
Yeah, okay.
Grant, I'm going to need you to cut that audio and send it to me for a ringtone. Every time my phone goes off, I just want it to be Randy yelling, oh, whores.
That's usually how I greet you when you pick up the phone. So it'll be like a duplicate effect. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a kick-ass party.
Yeah, don't listen to anything we just suggested.
Dennis McElwain says, has there ever been a more awkward, cringeworthy moment in TV than Armstrong popping up in Tour de Pharmacy?
Oh, man.
Curb Your Enthusiasm never made me feel so awkward.
I was watching that, and here's the thing. As an Austinite, I should know what this guy looks like, but I'm watching it, and it pops on, and I'm like, wait, is that? No. No, it's got to be an actor playing him or something.
Oh, no.
And as it goes, I'm like, credit to him for clearly the guy's supposed to be a bit of a dick, and I've heard that.
Oh, but, and he's but he's also got a huge ego.
But
and he needed this is a I mean, he knows how to repair or you know he wants to repair his image.
But
he
that is not crazy that he did that.
It was pretty amusing how
it didn't get me on the first one, but I think what they do it three or four times.
Oh, yeah,
by the time he's in the white, by the fourth or fifth callback of it.
Yeah, I went to the same high school as that guy. Yeah. I heard a lot of stories about him being an asshole.
Yeah, it didn't make me feel awkward. I was just kind of surprised that it was there and not sure I was seeing it.
Anything else more awkward or cringeworthy than that in TV?
I'm having trouble thinking of like awkward or cringeworthy stuff. There's definitely some stuff in Breaking Bad.
I always remember the American scene where the kid walks
Paige
in.
Paige walks in and her parents
69ing.
That's pretty awkward.
I just go, ugh.
Yeah, that's pretty awkward.
Yeah, there's been a lot of comedies lately that have had, you know, that have really mined that, like, oh my God, stop. I'm trying to think which show recently.
Did it.
Fleabag had several.
When Ricky Gervais in the original Office starts dancing, it's both hilarious and just cringeworthy. Like, oh, everything is so bad.
The first two that I think of, though, it's when somebody bad guest hosts on like Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
Every once in a while, those result in like a bad karaoke singing level of performance.
When Miley Cyrus got busted with doing the lip syncing and then did the awkward shuffle off the stage. That was great.
Was that Cyrus or Ashley Simpson? Or both?
I think it was. I thought it was Miley Cyrus.
It might have been both. I know that's happened a couple times. They've had lip syncing issues a couple times.
This was on TV, so it wasn't like. But maybe the most awkward moment ever: Kanye and Mike Myers.
Oh yeah,
you ever want to see what Mike Myers' "Get Me the Fuck Out of Here" face looks like? Go watch Kanye and Mike Myers.
I improv all the time, and I don't know what to do.
Oh, White House press conferences.
So good. Hey, speaking of politics, Nick Thighs has a TV revenge update. He says one more political letter, and generally I'd avoid political stuff, but oh boy, here we go. He says, dear press secretary Sean Spicer, this is Jimmy McGill from the AMC series Better Call Saul. I want to give you some friendly advice from one bullshitter to another. Just stop. You are not good at this. I don't know what you think you're trying to prove to everyone or yourself, but it is not working. And we can see how hard you are trying at it. Seriously, how much can one person sweat before they simply die of dehydration? I can help you fake your death, change your name, start over. I know a guy. Because no matter how desperately you try, you will never get Trump's approval. Sincerely, Jimmy. And then he follows this up with a question. He says, what TV character do the TV dudes think should replace Mr. Spicer once he's gone?
Well, it needs to be somebody shameless.
So William H. Macy.
William H. Macy. I don't know why this popped in my head, but Tiny Rick from Rick and Morty.
Oh, my God.
Just to come out and just not give a fuck. And you know that Rick could do it. He's got no morals. He could be the press secretary.
I mean, who's the biggest just straight up asshole on TV that you're like, fuck? Like Ehrlich Bachman.
Bachman, yeah. Yeah, he could totally be the Spicer.
On the show Chuck, I cannot remember the lead girl's name, his super spy date.
Yvonne girlfriend. Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah. Her dad, played by Gary Cole.
Oh, yeah,
is just a complete con artist slime ball. And I think could get this done.
Good.
James Woods in real life.
James Woods in real life.
What if you take another Sean? You take Sean, the lead from Psych.
Okay.
That guy was a good bullshitter.
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah.
Pretty much anybody from the UK series Hustle, Mickey Bricks, or any of the leads from that. That's a great show of con artists.
Also, check that one out. Also, Tyrion could do it, but he wouldn't.
Right. Yeah.
Because unlike Sean Spicer, he has some kind of ethics.
Oh, but now, again, I'm just pulling from memes, but Jon Snow doesn't know anything. He could do it.
Jon Snow could work in the administration.
Yeah, he knows.
He's cabinet level.
He knows nothing. He's perfect. Diego Jose Valdez. I'm going to skip your other one so I just don't butcher it. Hey, dudes. I just spent the last 3 weeks binge-watching Mad Men for the first time. It was amazing. It impressed me that it actually held my attention through all of it. It just kept evolving and yet staying the same. It's the most satisfying binge watching I've ever done. What are your favorite multi-season binge sessions?
I'm going to hand this one over to Les because Les does the multi-season binge.
Yeah, I've done this a few times. There's actually it's weird what makes for a good show like that for me isn't necessarily the ones that build up on a really grandiose plot. Like Mad Men wasn't arcing towards some world-ending cataclysm.
Right.
Like, you were moving through these people's lives in a series of arcs, and they paced them well enough that you stayed with it. So, I watched all of The Good Wife in a ridiculous amount of time.
Jeez.
And it's a lot of case-by-case, case of the week, Law and Order-y kind of stuff, but there's enough ongoing soap opera, and it came and went in such a way that it really held me to it. The Wire is a classic one. Deadwood is a classic rewatch.
Those are harrowing watches.
There are things sewn into every season that catch you where you just end, like, they're paced well enough that you end up making it across the seam.
Yeah.
There's a fist fight in every Deadwood season. Bullock gets in a fist fight that is the hallway fight in an old boy level of just like, oh my God, that's the craziest fist fight I've seen since last season when Bullock and Swearengen fell off. So to me, like, there's been several shows like that. I think The Wire was really satisfying because, again, it keeps evolving, but it's infuriatingly the same.
I can go back to Friday Night Lights and rewatch that one over and over as just end to end. I love it.
You know the ones I've binged?
Except season two.
I binged Avatar: The Last Airbender, of all things.
Yeah,
the cartoon, like, that one is a really satisfying binge, and it's really entertaining
because all the episodes are short, and you feel like you're kind of like accomplishing something. You're ticking it off.
Steven Universe, all the episodes were really short. I mean, compared to most shows that we end up watching, and it's at once a very satisfying. I mean, it's an amazing show, and it's still I won't say it's unsatisfying, but it was kind of an unpleasant binge. There's a tinge of realism and sadness to like Rainy Day to it a little bit. That I finished watching just insane number of Steven Universe shows in a row, like 25 or 30 episodes of this thing, I think, over like a weekend. And I came away from it like, oh wow, I need to call my grandparents are dead. Just not a great binge.
Well, Kyle Shuttler says, hey dudes. So what do you think of the mid-season twist on AMC's premiere of series to Turn, Washington Spies? I did not see that coming. And as a big tourney, in quotes, I really am looking forward to how this new development will play out as the series approaches its finale. I'm hoping that General Washington will be able to beat the British and for the 13 colonies to gain their independence, but you never know. As with other AMC shows like Mad Men or Breaking Bad, and especially Rubicon, there's a lot of theories, but you can never tell how it's going to end. Plus, the Robert Forster cameo as Benedict Arnold was a nice surprise. Viva la revolution, dudes, and keep on turning.
You know, I'm glad he mentioned this because I was watching Preacher, and the ads came on for Turn Washington Spies, the season finale, the series finale, and yeah. I can't believe we're here. I can't believe we've finally gotten – we do a Turn episode every year. It's always our biggest, most listeners we get every year.
We always end up losing that episode.
I do have to take issue, though. I mean, I know that it was a split from the LiveJournal group, and there was a huge flame war, but I'm part of the group that considers us turncoats.
Yeah.
Turnies.
Yeah, yeah. Turnies. Remember, turnies was like close enough to attorneys, and that was what they called the Better Call Saul fans. So,
yeah, so
that was
what
that whole
thing.
Yeah.
So I already know that his opinions on the show are invalid. But personally, I don't know what show people are watching. Like, I've been watching this entire thing and thinking, what right do we have to ask for King George to make all of these tax stamp? You know, all these tax records public to the colonists. They're
right.
Colonists.
Yeah.
Just shut up and do what the king says.
Yeah, that is weird. That was the third season. That was their hashtag, shut up and do what the king says.
As far as I understood, King George is under audit, so he can't actually release it.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, he tells all of this. I mean, he ties it to pigeons. Yeah, so he ties it to a pigeon leg, and he sends it out, and the bird, like, tweets and flies.
You know. Yeah. You know what else is weird?
There's a metaphor in there.
I thought it was really strange when they revealed that it was actually King George's twin brother who was the king, and that the actual King George was a man in an iron mask living in the colonies. That was a big twist.
It was a good one.
To see that revealed, to see that play out, and to get Leonardo DiCaprio to come back and play the man in the iron mask again, brilliant casting.
What a mensch.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So, we love that show. Kyle Volpe says, with TJ Miller's departure from Silicon Valley, I realize I'm not that upset. Can you guys think of any departures of main characters from a show that didn't really affect the show that much?
I thought I was going to be upset about TJ Miller leaving, and then the closer we got to it, the more I realized that TJ Miller's kind of an asshole, and I don't wish him success anymore.
He's a loony bird.
And so,
yeah, I'm having more and more of a hard time with TJ Miller as a person, and it's making me not care as much about TJ Miller's performances.
So, but yeah, by the time he went out, I was also like, yeah, fuck him, leave him where he is, that's fine. But I do have a couple answers for this. Diane from Cheers. Like, when she left, I feel like I don't think the show lost a step. They managed to pick up and do really well without her, and arguably the better episodes
came
afterwards.
But were you scared at the time before Kirstie Alley came in? And like,
I don't think I was. I don't think I was that worried about it.
All right.
The other one, and this is a different one, but David Caruso on NYPD Blue, there was a big deal about, you know, that he was going to leave and that kind of thing. But just as with TJ Miller, he was such an asshole that it was better to see him go. You don't want him happy. And the show got along great without him and became even better.
Nikki and Paolo, when they left Lost, I didn't mind too much.
Disagree. Best character, show went downhill after that.
You were the guy. You were the guy who loved him.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of people who've left and I didn't care. Connie Britton on Nashville, just recently they killed off Raina and when they made the jump over to CMT. And I don't think the show has suffered for it. Unfortunately, I don't think that they've been able to convince fans of this to watch it. Like, I feel like that fear is still so strong. Like, that was first, my mom was just completely freaked out. Like, they've killed off Raina. They've ruined the whole show. Like, have you been watching it? Because it's still just as good. They haven't replaced her with another person. This isn't like Spin City where Fox left and Sheen stepped in or Sheen leaving and Kutcher stepping in on Two and a Half Men. They didn't replace Raina with another character. The ensemble shifted power structure around her or around the gap. And to me, when shows will do that, if you've let the rest of your ensemble step up so that Valerie can die and it becomes the Hogan family, then you're solid.
Michael Gustini says, at only four episodes, Castlevania felt like an unsatisfying storytelling experience. The plot was intriguing, but the season ended way too soon, and the episodes on a whole felt oddly structured. Do you dudes think that we are reaching a point where the terms episode and season are inconsequential units of measurement in TV? This also is the case with many creators claiming they're making X hours of movie as a TV series.
Yeah, so we'll talk specifics on Castlevania later.
Yeah.
But There's a lot to talk about here, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix did something kind of similar with The Get Down, where they broke it up into like six episodes, I want to say, each.
And they called them books, I think. Or it was weird.
Based off of books, the main character? Okay.
I don't know. They called them like it. They tried a whole different thing, even different terminology for their.
Do we have to blame AMC for this? They're splitting Breaking Bad and Mad Men into the two and like their seasons became half seasons.
Like Game of Thrones is doing it too. I mean, I think it's about like allowing a certain degree of creative flexibility for the creators of the show.
But AMC did it first, and they did it for marketing reasons.
Yeah,
and that's kind of obnoxious. So
I feel like this is more coming from the creators realizing the freedom that's allowed when you drop things all at once.
Yeah,
I think we're finally seeing the fallout. Or the last year or so has been the fallout from creators realizing and networks realizing this change in distribution method where you can drop all of a show at once. And I really thought we were going to get some consideration of how to pace that for people's actual consumption.
Yeah.
Because it's not week to week. I'm not saying that that's the answer. But I can't watch all 16 hours of something literally in a row. I will have to go to sleep at some point or walk away from the TV or something. Like, nothing's going to carry like that.
Yeah.
And this is really Castlevania particularly was the moment of like, okay, you guys had the no rules. I left this for you to figure out, how to pace this, professional storytellers.
Yeah.
But since you fucking can't, maybe somebody needs to lay back down a 1 hour structure. I mean, like, TV shows with commercials at 1 hour or 42 minutes have a dead-on structure that is dictated to you by a – granted, dictated by a corporation, doesn't give a shit about your story.
Yeah.
But at 45 minutes, the A-team is screwed. You go to break. You come back. The A-team solves it. 15 minutes. And boom, you're out. And at least it was a plot setup that you understood. We were speaking the same language, and you didn't have to teach me how your story was going to work before you started telling it to me.
See, that's funny because I agree with you in part, but I also like this freedom of experimentation that's going on.
If they'll do it better than Castlevania, I'm cool with it.
It's a little bit Wild West, and I think that you're going to have some people that fuck up with it and other people that are able to do a lot more interesting things. Like, a lot of Game of Thrones episodes, like in these last two seasons, are going to be like an hour and a half. They're like all movies at this point.
Yeah, and that's the good example.
Like, take as much time as you guys want.
And the flip side of this, Kurt Sutter, who needs to have an editor come in to fix every one of his episodes.
I guess I just never considered like pacing and time structure to be one of those style tricks that was going to creep in. Like for every Boondock Saints that comes out, there's like five straight to video unwatchable film school messes.
Well, like Glow was all like either like 30 minutes to 40 minutes. They just kind of fluctuated.
Yeah, there are shows that fluctuate and I love it. There was something
Master of None is completely experimental about its timing and its pacing and the way they ended their season on essentially a cliffhanger and then said, yeah, we may not come back and do anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely that experimentation and that I love, but yeah, I think that's the thing is that you never know if someone can be trusted with those tools.
Like you think of like Aziz Ansari, you think of Donald Glover, Louis C.K. before them, having that, I could even go back to Larry David.
Yeah.
Larry David in a way kind of was one of the first people that's like, hey, I'm going to do this show whenever I want.
Yeah.
I'm going to make another season. But he at least stuck to like a 13-episode structure, right?
Yeah.
You understood he was talking the language of television shows and you know what you're getting into. It's not like some experimental – yeah, it's not like reading E.E. Cummings. Like, you know you're going to get a poem.
I feel like the rule should be –
power has just trickled more and more to the creators.
The rule at least should be like 8 to 22 episodes. Like somewhere in there is a season. If it's less than 7 – or more than 22, it's not a season. You've done something wrong.
There's a web series, High Maintenance, it's just one of those flawless, like the guys writing it, the tone they hit, each episode is just, wow, you know the show you're making. HBO picked it up and started making episodes as well. Mm-hmm. And they're short little episodes. Like it feels like a web series. And I was telling Randy before the show, I just tried to watch something called H+, that is also a web series. Bryan Singer, professionally done, really great. It's 48 parts long, and each one fluctuates between 4 and 8 minutes. It's infuriating. There's credits after every one of them. So I kept sitting there going, wow, High Maintenance worked in a 10 to 15-minute episode time limit. This thing's 4 to 8 to 10-minute episodes and not working, like infuriating me. And so I I think it's good that these things can be different for each story and that creators can do it. I just think it's a new area where we're going to watch people fuck it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's hit one last question because we've gone long on these. And thank you guys all so much for your questions. And that wasn't a slight on you. But we've gone long, Les.
Thanks, Les.
You were just the last one talking. It wasn't on you. But last question goes to Jonathan Half to Michael, who says, "Hi, dudes. With everyone doing top 10 movies of the year so far lists for the past few weeks, what do you think are the best TV shows of the year so far? To make it interesting, you have to exclude Fargo and Better Call Saul."
First of all, Jonathan, thanks for making me do my homework 6 months early. I always put together my end of year list, and I had to go through and do the work this afternoon.
Yeah.
Which, fortunately, I love doing. So I have a list. I have an actual list.
Oh, yeah?
It goes 42 numbers, just so you know. 42. I'm not going to go through all of it, but I have 42 shows I've watched this year. This year so far, 42 shows.
That's not complete.
That's not complete. That's this year so far.
No, I mean, those aren't shows you've completed.
No, but it's probably like 30 shows I've completed.
I think we're about there.
Leaving out Fargo and Better Call Saul, which, by the way, are my top three, but not my top two.
Okay.
Legion.
That's your number one?
That's my number two if Fargo's in there, but it's number one in this list, yes.
Okay.
Master of None.
Uh-huh.
Glow. Handmaid's Tale. Always Sunny in Philadelphia, iZombie, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Dear White People. That is where it ends if you make me include Fargo and Better Call Saul. But since they're out, Veep and Silicon Valley squeak in.
Okay.
It's down below 20.
Wait. Les just said what's down below 20.
Les, would you like to know what the last ones are? They are DC Legends of Tomorrow, Flash, and Castlevania. They're on the list of things that either I haven't finished watching or they're on the list because technically I watched them.
Spoiler for how you feel about Castlevania. Adding to that list, I had The Good Place and The Leftovers and 13 Reasons Why. So those are also on my top list.
The Good Place would be on mine, but most of season one was last year.
I know. So I figured it felt like a little bit of a cheat. Oh, yeah. My alternate was The Mick.
The Mick is close on mine, too.
Yeah.
Anything else?
In no particular order, Legion, Atlanta.
Atlanta was last year. That's why I wasn't on there.
Oh, okay. Atlanta was last year.
Yeah. I knew there was a reason I wouldn't have it on there.
Yeah.
Glow. Glow was an incredible surprise.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. You guys, Castlevania might have to be on the top of that list for me.
I don't think I'd be so mad at it if I didn't like it and then get mad at it.
All right, guys, so we've got a little bit of news this week. Marvel has cast their new Warriors, which most of these are young people you've never heard of, at least I've never heard of. But the lead playing Squirrel Girl is someone that I know Grant has a fondness for.
I think most of the internet has a fondness for her if they've seen her and stuff.
Yeah. So it's Milana Weintraub.
I don't actually know how to say her name, Weintraub.
But she's the AT&T girl, and for those of you who watched it, the Other Space girl.
She was in Other Space, AT&T. She was the girlfriend of the main guy in Love very briefly before.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Right at the beginning when he breaks up with her.
She's also been in Silicon Valley and This Is Us.
Yeah, she was when Guilfoyle has the girlfriend when he's a Satanist in the first season.
Oh, okay.
This is his girlfriend.
They've cast their Mr. Immortal. I like the look of this cast, but I know nothing about any of them.
Yeah, I'm just really glad that they cast a good diverse cast of kids that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with the Squirrel Girl casting simply because I know at one point, like, I know Anna Kendrick was really liked the role and the internet was freaking out about it and everything. And all I could think was she's great in her career.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't want a super thin, sardonic Squirrel Girl.
No.
Yeah.
That's not her style.
I didn't want her. I didn't want the girl who played Barb in Stranger Things, but she was certainly capitalizing on her 15 minutes. Oh, yeah? I thought, I was like, yeah, you're going to also get Squirrel Girl.
Maybe. Yeah, this girl looks great. I think this will be a good casting.
I just hope it's good. I'm really wary of them doing it, playing just for laughs. I actually like the new Warriors, and I'm afraid they're going to punk them all out. But we'll see.
Well, at the end of season one, when they level the town, it's going to be great.
Oh, God. Oh, that hurts. Physically hurts me. Michael C. Hall is coming back to TV. He has been doing voice casting on Justice League and Star vs. the Force of Evil. You might remember him as Lumberjack Dexter.
Also
show about the baby,
Dexter.
Right?
And also regular Dexter. Lumberjack Dexter was the action figure they sold at the end of the Showtime show.
I never watched the last season.
Me neither, and I'm glad I didn't.
Everything but that last season.
So he's done in some film. He's going to be a leading role in a new Netflix series called Safe, which is an 8-part thriller written by Shameless's Danny Brocklehurst, which great name, by the way. So this is he's a British pediatric surgeon raising two teenage daughters after the death of his wife. They live in a safe and picturesque gated community, but it's all thrown in disarray one night when Jenny sneaks out of a party. There's a murder and a disappearance, bringing buried secrets to the surface. And I don't know, man.
Is this Taken? Is this The Killing? Like, what's going on
here? It's a mystery thriller, and I don't know. Something about it is giving me the...
Also, is Michael C. Hall British? And I didn't know this.
He might be.
That's what I was just thinking. I don't know.
I don't think he's British.
I don't
think
he is.
This is a little... If he's not...
Twist?
Yeah, that's a little switcheroo. An American doing a British accent?
Yes. Yeah.
Good luck, mate.
Well, and I got to say, I mean...
I can't do British.
Television has not really, I don't think, mined the storytelling area of rich people with secrets...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a disappeared child at a party.
Especially rich white people.
Ooh.
We never see those stories.
Yeah. This isn't all the seasons of The Mentalist.
Thanks, Netflix.
All right, guys. We want to talk about this?
Yep. Let's do it. Let's hit it.
All right. As you guys know, every year I throw a lavish party for my favorite award show, the Emmys.
You love them so much.
I love them so much that... I was awake the night before they finally unveiled all the categories. I had my brackets. Mm-hmm. My 300 closest friends gathered around to watch as we unveiled each one. I fucking hate the Emmys, you guys. I hate them. I hate them so much.
What's your three words for the Emmys?
Fuck the Emmys.
There you go. But yeah, we have a bunch of letdowns. It's a disappointment.
And the sad part is this is them at their best. This is really – they got much better this year and last year, but they still fucked it up.
There's so much good TV that people are going to be disappointed every year, but it still bugs me when I look at these categories and I see shows that I know were not at the top of their game that are just grandfathered in, I guess, because they're a legacy winner.
Yeah. What the fuck is House of Cards doing on here anyway?
House of Cards last season was muddled and wonky, and why is it still on here? I don't know. Like, that season, I don't feel earned it.
I'll say this, though. They generally did all right in dramas. They got Better Call Saul. They got Handmaid's Tale. They got Stranger Things, which is a big surprise. They got Westworld, which it's HBO, but still kind of a surprise. This Is Us I'm not surprised about, and The Crown I'm not surprised about.
See, I'm also confused about where the cutoff is, because Handmaid's Tale is included on here.
Yeah.
So, where was the cutoff for when you could nominate a show?
Yeah, it needs to be – maybe they released Handmaid's Tale to the critics early or something, but it needs to be – if the show aired in 2016, that's when it goes on the next year's Emmys. If it hasn't, it shouldn't. I mean, this whole bullshit, whatever the cutoff is, I can't tell what should be on and what got cut off.
I have one other little gripe I just want to say.
Where the fuck is the Leftovers?
Sorry, I'm so angry.
But
that the Leftovers is not on there. Carrie Coon is not nominated for Best Actress. Michael McKean is not.
She's nominated in
for
Fargo.
Best Supporting Actor.
For that's crazy.
No, what? Is it Carrie? She's nominated for Fargo,
yes.
Which Grant thinks is a lesser performance.
She was even ironically, didn't we have a question from someone who thought that she sucked ass in Fargo? Yeah.
No, here's the thing.
It was my ghost account.
You got to remember about the Emmys. They like to spread things around, and so therefore they make a bunch of bullshit up about the categories. Like Black Mirror is not a series of television movies. Fargo, its third season, is not a fucking limited series. And then Carrie Coon. They wanted a nominator. There wasn't enough room to put her in for lead actor in a drama series, so they snuck her in by putting her in a lead actor in a limited series or movie. So the nomination is for Leftovers.
But to be fair, how that works is how Fargo decides to submit themselves to categories.
Yes. You're so a bunch Fargo, of cheaters, Fargo.
Fargo submitted as a limited series. Black Mirror submitted themselves for their best chance as an outstanding television movie.
If the world's dumbest, most arcane packet of rules showed up on my doorstep and you knew that winning it made the difference in whether your shit gets canceled or not, I would submit myself as whatever we had the best chance of destroying you at.
This is true.
That's true. So
can I be an anime series? Like, yeah, can Leftovers be in the anime category? Or so? Like,
so it's back on the Emmys.
So to put it back on the Emmys. Fuck the Emmys.
Fuck the Emmys.
They did all right here. Atlanta's in here. Blackish got nominated again. Master of None for its season two, which is weird because that just aired.
Mm.
Modern Family, of course, is on here because it's going to be on here forever, long after the entire cast is long dead.
I feel snubbed because the award show is still going.
Yes.
Like, that was really my only request last year, was to just stop. This thing is useless. I mean, I get why there are top 10 lists, and I get wanting to know in an era of peak TV what's just killing it in its genre, but this is an absolutely useless award show that is so opaque. Nobody knows how it's run or for who. It's definitely not in any kind of sane way that is in argue. I mean, nobody's going to come out of this going, yeah, that is the funniest thing on TV. No one's going to feel like that.
It's interesting that Game of Thrones was not eligible this year.
Yeah.
So you don't see them clouding up every single category with all their deep roster. But This Is Us is swamping this thing now.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch that show, so I don't know. I have feelings about the pilot, so.
You know what one of my favorite things is to look at these categories for the actors and see where the Academy loves the actor but hates the show. Like, Liv Schreiber's been on there for like 3 years for Ray Donovan, and that's purely because it's Liv Schreiber.
Yeah, because even like that, like him on that show is him just going, I'm angry at that stuff.
Viola Davis is on there for How to Get Away with Murder. There was another one I saw. William H. Macy's on there for Shameless. Jeffrey Tambor's on there for Transparent. Neither of those shows represent anywhere else. Allison Janney is on there for Mom because she's Allison Janney.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Aubrey Plaza is too weird in Legion.
And Legion got nothing.
Yeah, there's definitely reeks of I guess starfuckeriness or whatever, rather than like, but these are quality actors still.
Yeah,
too,
yeah,
but
sure. It's an award show from the people who never nominated Hannibal for cinematography.
Yeah,
yeah,
not once.
Yeah,
that you have no idea what you're doing on television if that wasn't the prettiest fucking show on for a year.
I shared this other article with you guys
from
Rolling Stone that was some snubs that they listed. Mm-hmm. And we already hit on a couple of them. But there was some news earlier this year about Asia Kate Dillon from Billions, who was submitting for a alternate category, a non-binary character category, and was not nominated for their role in that either.
I suspect that was because of that. I think the Emmys, they don't want to be on the edge of that.
I suspect because when I watched the performance, I wasn't necessarily like amazed by it.
Yeah.
I didn't think that's a stellar performance in that role.
I did think that they elevated the show. It made me much more interested in the show.
Yeah, but I put that more toward storytelling.
Yeah. So.
Aubrey Plaza in Legion.
Yes, that's a complete miss.
But that's also like genre weird, and I can understand why it gets muddled.
Sure.
Why is Stranger Things on there? Stranger Things was really fun.
But yeah, I don't understand why it's best series.
Stranger Things is pretty beloved.
It's beloved, but it's also like...
I beloved it.
I beloved the hell out of it. But it's kind of schlocky still, isn't it? It's pulpy intentionally.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know. It felt like so much of an homage that I didn't necessarily
Complained at the Academy Awards about genres getting snubbed for being sci-fi or for being horror, and I feel like I'm arguing that. The opposite for Stranger Things. But yeah, when I saw that in Best Series and I went, there were other series. I mean, I didn't watch The Leftovers, but I understand it was good.
Lakeith Stanfield from Atlanta.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, I love that Donald Glover got nominated for Atlanta.
Sure.
He should get nominated for everything on that show.
Yeah.
But Lakeith Stanfield just made it week to week for me.
That guy was the knockout, like standout performance in television that I can think of, like as far as a newcomer that I'm just like blown away by.
I mean, I was shocked by Paperboy. Like, both of them were great.
Yeah.
Did more with their roles than they needed to. Everyone in that show did. But, oh, my God, Lakeith Stanfield just was amazing.
It's like the first time I saw Dwight Schrute or something.
Yes.
Like, just like,
yes.
You're so quirky and weird, but immediately fascinating. Yeah. And, yeah. Like,
if you're not an iconic
actors,
character.
Yeah. It's just, man. Insecure.
Insecure got police snubbed, and so did Issa Rae, and that's messed up.
This also mentions Freddie Highmore from Bates Motel, who I guess put up a fucking stellar performance in this season, but I didn't watch it.
I haven't watched this season. He's been great in that show, and given where it goes, if he pulled it off, I can see why they would say that. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, we don't get Swango. We don't get Stuhlberg from Fargo.
That's crazy.
And then this was another point riding off of what you were talking about, Les. American Gods, nothing. And at least give credit where credit is due for how visionary this show is.
At least give Ian McShane a nod, man.
Yeah,
I mean, he's doing killer work on
this
show.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get this. It also lists Winona Ryder and Ed Harris for Stranger Things and Westworld.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see them.
I understand why they're not there.
I'd have put Jimmy Simpson up before Ed Harris on that, I think.
Yeah. I understand why The Americans isn't on there, because they just they've ignored The Americans for a long time, and they were just going to keep doing it. It's like, you know, they had the same thing with Mad Men for the longest time. They just weren't giving them anything, and I was like, okay, somebody there hates it.
Yeah.
The running joke on the Academy Awards for years was that award for best score written by anybody not Danny Elfman. Like, it just did not matter what the man did. He was not going to win it.
I can't have this, Danny.
What's funny is I'm more invested in TV than movies, but I do hate the Academy Awards more than the Emmy Awards.
Now, the daytime Emmys have some cred.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? I don't know. I was going to be like, okay, you say so.
Another world taking days? Yeah.
All right, closing thoughts on the Emmys, Randy?
Fuck the Emmys.
Folks, we're going to be talking about a series of shows in order. We're going to first hit up on Silicon Valley and then Veep. Then we're going to hit Tour de Pharmacy, also on HBO, before jumping over to Netflix for Castlevania and then wrapping things up with Preacher over on AMC. But Randy, you and I watched Silicon Valley and Veep. We wrapped their seasons,
yep,
which were season 4 and 6, respectively, I believe.
I think that's right. I was having trouble keeping track.
And we wrapped those a couple weeks back, but it's been busy with all the shows that we've been covering.
There's a lot of TV.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you, Silicon Valley, what'd you think of this season?
It's interesting. Silicon Valley and Veep both go back and forth, like which one I like better week to week.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, by the time it ended, I think I was happier with Veep than Silicon Valley.
But this season, me too.
But I liked Silicon Valley. I do think that T.J. Miller's departure clearly fucked things up. Like, they were... I think there's probably an arc that got shafted there.
Maybe.
I feel like
you
this
think
story
the drama
just
behind
vanished.
The scenes, like,
yes.
Here's what ended up happening. They started this season in a very interesting way for
yep,
me.
Yep.
They started with what's the lead guy's name? Richard.
Richard. Yeah.
They started with Richard being at odds with the rest of the group.
Yeah.
The group was fractured. He was isolated.
Yeah.
It was him and tall German best friend Jared. I should have their names pulled up here, but it started with them kind of isolated from the rest of the group, yep, within the house. And I thought that made for a very interesting dynamic. In fact, I wish it would have pushed that and kept going in that direction, because what they tend to do is the entourage trap.
Yeah, that's a big danger in this show.
And they love falling back into the safety of the formula. And this is what has frustrated me with the show kind of going forward, is that they hit a point where they're like, we need the gang back together. So it almost seemed like a convoluted series of circumstances that just like force them all back into the same group again.
It is the entourage problem. It's every time something looks like it might be a problem, something magically solves it for them.
And shrug your shoulders and let bygones be bygones so that we can just move the plot forward.
Probably the worst one, I think, was when they were placing illegal wiretap devices all over the convention center. They got caught and then they lucked out of it because of the security guy. Like that was just really too easy. And the finale, I kind of respect it because it played back on the Jin Yang
fridge thing,
which I thought was funny as hell. But it was like the easiest win after what like an apocalyptic loss, and I'm tired of them winning so easily
or accidentally. It's like
yes.
At a certain point, these guys are so incompetent.
Yeah.
That do I want them to win?
Yeah.
It's like it with Entourage. They're so douchey that I'm rooting for them to fail.
Yeah.
In a way.
I think my biggest issue at this point is that I feel like the cast has sort of outgrown this thing like a booster rocket. Like Thomas Middleditch and the guy who plays Jared, whose name I'm blanking on, and Kumail Nanjiani. All these guys are going to be making movies if they're not already. I mean, Nanjiani obviously is. They really are not being served on Silicon Valley. They're better actors. Martin Starr, too. These are all better actors than the stuff they're getting to do this season. And I like this. I do. I enjoy it. It makes me laugh. I like the characters' interaction. But, yeah, I feel like they need to step up the plot a little bit.
Les, you read the interview with T.J. Miller on The Hollywood Reporter as well, right?
Yeah.
Though you don't watch the show.
No, but he – oh, man. I liked that guy. I mean, I've liked his performances. He was great in Big Hero 6. He's been funny. He was Marmaduke.
In Carpool.
Yeah. I mean, he's given some really great turns, and every interview I've read, peaking with that one, he just gets weirder and weirder. And like, man, are you all right? Like, you seem somewhere between crazy. You're at least a dick, if not actually nuts.
Yeah,
he's a huge narcissist.
Yeah,
but he said something that I actually agreed with, and he kind of kept coming back to it, and that was that him leaving will at least force them to have to break up the dynamic that makes them keep playing this show safe.
Yeah.
And I mean, I felt like he said that in a bunch of weird ways.
So to say, he kind of put that forward in a like, oh, the way he put out his departure was so, well, I meant, you know, they, nobody asked me who it wasn't in, but I left.
I'm a master architect, and I'm going to force them to be better because I won't be there to keep making it great, so they'll have to make it great without me.
That's the most delusional spin on getting fired I've ever heard,
but
if that's what happened. But
nevertheless, I feel like he is right in a way about it, because they need something to shake them from their complacency.
Because I've only seen one episode of Veep, and it literally opens with him being like, with T.J. Miller standing at a party with them, being a rich doofus
with Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley.
And it's frustrating to me. I still think that it's so quick-witted. There's so many jokes in here. If I can just fall back on that, this show is brilliant. But if I start thinking about the larger plot, my problems are that they don't want to push boundaries, and this show has all the potential to do it, and it's
I like failing. It a little less each year.
Yeah.
And yet I always still like it. Like, it was always it's still in my top 10. I still really enjoyed it, but it's frustrating because I think it could be great and it's merely good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Veep did something interesting this year, because they took the entire group and did break them apart into a whole bunch of different groups.
I didn't think that was going to work or last, and I thought they did a great job with it.
Yeah, it was very impressive. They weren't in the political realm like properly.
Yeah.
They were sort of ancillary to the larger game.
Like you, I kept waiting for them to come back together. Like oh, they're going to keep doing it. And they went the whole season without putting them together. I thought it was great. I also like – this has such an expansive cast at this point. It's like Parks and Rec. It's got all the different – like the douchey congressman and his beleaguered assistant who he makes say humiliating things, and Jonah and his uncle and his wife and
two staff guys that just don't want to be there,
and Dan's whole show that had Paul Scheer as the showrunner, and like they really did each had their own their little world. And Marjorie, the ex-Secret Service agent, has become a character I really love, like her flat deliveries. I mean, they've really expanded the show really well, and I think that handling a big cast like this is worth noting.
Richard Splett blows me away in this.
Love that character.
He is one of the funniest characters, and I wasn't really sure initially. I'm just like, this guy's just like this weird doofus.
Yeah.
But he is a gold mine. Like, they can just feed him anything. And apparently, they keep revealing that he's also really smart.
Yeah.
He's just such a nice guy that he's like a weird pushover in this this crazy world of opportunists.
When he was the artificial insemination, he revealed he had never masturbated before. That was so
I don't think I can stop now.
Yeah. one of my favorite plots this season was Dan and the older woman who was his co-anchor and the younger woman who wanted to be in the, that whole thing was hilarious to me. I love how Dan is an unrepentant douchebag with no morals or ethics whatsoever.
I think we can compare this also to Silicon Valley in the way that it does return to a certain safety of formula end of the season with the gang getting back together. Spoiler, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was excited to see it because I felt like they paid their dues and showed that they are able to do it without the group together.
Right.
And it kind of happened in a fairly organic way where I bought it.
Yeah, and they're not failing upward either.
No.
Like, the lucky thing that happens is whenever something good happens to Selena, whether it's like revealing that she had – you know, the news reveals that she had more to do with the peace treaty, she fucks it up because of her own ego.
Yeah.
And so I never feel like – she never gets the easy wins because even when she does, she messes with them.
And what a jarringly beautiful moment when she breaks up with her boyfriend and she rides that escalator down.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those reminders that I'm like, Julia Louis-Dreyfus she's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But she can do drama.
Yeah.
She's just so good.
The thing my gripe with this season is I thought Amy's story went nowhere.
Yeah, it didn't feel like they fully knew what to do with her.
Her opening arc with her and her husband, her husband to be congressman, and him being this like honest plain guy, and her being Amy. I liked all of that up until the point that ended, and then I felt like she was adrift for the rest of the season.
Yeah, she was an extra.
And I love Anna Chlumsky, and I love that character, and I was sad to see her not get more to do.
I feel like it was just a problem with too many great cast members. They didn't really know how to fit everyone.
Yeah,
but with how this also ends with Mike being kicked off the team and them picking up the reporter guy from the Sonic commercials.
By the way, Mike pitching his humor column is one of my favorite things.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to next season, just how this played out.
Yeah, me too.
Over on HBO as well, Tour de Pharmacy. We mentioned this at the front of the show, but this is Andy Samberg's next film. Is it him? I mean, he's like one of the main writers.
Written by Murray Miller.
Written by Murray Miller, directed by Jake Szymanski.
Okay.
Yeah. Samberg's in it, but he's really not in it that much.
It's produced by the Lonely Island.
But yeah, it is definitely on his. Yeah.
Okay, this is the same guy, the same director who did 7 Days in Hell.
The tennis one.
And Mike and Dave need wedding dates, which I've never seen and don't want to. And then it's written by the guy who worked on American Dad, which makes sense, and wrote 7 Days in Hell. So clearly, 7 Days in Hell was enough of a hit for them that they decided to go back and do more.
Yeah, and I didn't see that.
Too. Just like all the cameos they were able to throw in there.
So the pitch of Tour de Pharmacy is this is the 82 Tour de France, and almost all of the people participating cyclists are caught doping, so it's reduced to only 5 cyclists.
Yeah. I think one of the best turns in it was Kevin Bacon as the person who's supposed to be supposed to be testing them.
Yes.
Yeah, who just sends out a letter to literally everyone, if you would give me $50,000, I just won't test you.
Yep. And also Kevin Bacon doing a German accent was super fun.
Spectacular.
So it's 5 cyclists. Andy Samberg playing the Nigerian Marty – no, Sudanese, I think.
Nigerian.
Was he Nigerian?
Yes.
Yeah. Marty Haas, the son of a diamond mine owner who is representing Nigeria.
And then Jeff Goldblum playing him in present day.
And the present day casting, by the way,
that's
is fantastic.
Spectacular.
Orlando Bloom plays Juju Pepe, who died with his dick out. That's not a spoiler. That happens in the first 5 minutes.
Also hilarious.
I knew what I was in for. As soon as that happened, I'm like – and by the way, the thing is the narrator says – he's like, he had his dick out to pee, which is a thing cyclists actually do.
Yeah.
And yeah, we knew we were in that. Adrian Baton, played by Freddie Highmore, previously mentioned on the and played it, the past self or the future self is played by Julia Ormond because he was a woman posing as a man with a badly drawn on mustache.
Yes.
Poor Freddie Highmore.
You've got David Diggs playing Slim Robinson, who is played hilariously later on by Danny Glover.
Yes.
In one of the best worst wigs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then you've got Gustav Ditters, played by John Cena. I'm sorry, played by John Cena.
Nice.
And then in the future, played by Dolph Lundgren.
Yes.
And that's it, right? That's the whole team?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And they cut between – this is like an HBO documentary. So basically they cut between them telling stories and it gets more and more ridiculous. There's the gay but not gay romance that develops. There's Slim Robinson just opting out of the race to go run a milk farm and then opting back in.
The weak fight that breaks out between everyone except John Cena.
And is it James Marsden?
James Marsden is as the reporter
who actually rides all the stages with them.
Yes. And then there's some just great little – Felicia Rashad is in there. Maya Rudolph is in there. They have these little bits. Adewale Akinbaje.
Yeah. We hate Marty Haas.
Haas. Good.
What's the name of the guy for the doping commission?
Nathan Freeview.
Nathan Fielder.
Yeah. Why have you tried that? Oh, we try all the drugs that are banned.
I love when he's going and showing his gallery of art.
Yes, all of these are for sale.
It's just killing me.
See, on that one, the bear's blowing me. It's a very different drug.
And then there's a couple other big things. One, of course, is J.J. Abrams is here playing himself.
Yeah.
Which, let's just feel something you wanted to do.
That was the most random one in there.
Mike Tyson
owns it.
Yeah. Although, Mike Tyson, we need to stop putting him in things. That
but he's
a rapist.
Gotten better and better at being Mike Tyson, at least.
Yeah, but he's an awful person.
Yeah.
But also, speaking of awful people, Lance Armstrong in here, and the whole gag of, like, his voice has changed, and he's blacked out. And you know, anyone who's seen the Naked Gun movies or anything like that knows that what's going to happen is they're going to turn the light on, we're going to see who it is. And when you see who it is, and it just keeps going back to him, and they're like, he's like, we can give you a code if you want to change your profile. And he's wearing his fur coat, and they give him a cowboy hat, and he starts saying all this shit. And he's like, wow, man, he would kill me if he knew.
Well, since I'm anonymous,
funnier.
Yeah, yeah, it's not the he's not the best performer, and it's not the greatest done joke, and it's been beat to death. But then they continue to drive it into the ground three or four more times, and it's great.
Yeah. And then do you guys know who narrated this? It's John Hamm.
Oh. I mean,
makes a lot of sense.
The first one, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's got
a
great voice.
This has the feeling of, you know, when like, I just blanked on his name. Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
When Will Ferrell gets his buddies together and they do like dumb stuff on, the comedy thing that he's got.
College Humor
Humor.
Like Bat Fight, Funny or Die.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. It feels like a long skit, that kind of thing, but it never feels like it's wearing out its welcome.
It's only 40 minutes. It's
only 40 minutes.
Yeah. And it feels like they're having so much fun and that they were like, we got HBO money. Let's do whatever. Let's bring in whoever we want.
There were more funny moments in this than I expected. I'm not an Andy Samberg fan. There's a lot of these comedians and somewhat in here, I felt it too, where some of these jokes are clever, but they don't work as a story.
Yeah.
Like it's a series of bits. And they're funny. Like a lot of them were funny bits, but it definitely had a, like, let's throw all the jokes at the wall, and see what sticks. And it worked best for me where there was an actual coherent thing. Like the love affair bit between Marty Haas and Freddie Highmore's character, like that was funny overall and yielded some jokes. But then there were some just random one-offs where I went, man, I really wish y'all didn't think y'all were as clever as you think you are.
Okay. That said, when they showed that commercial the about the spilling milk and like,
yes, like, that was spectacular.
This doesn't make any sense. And everyone just buys into this. Like, this is going to be absurd.
Maya Randolph's reactions, like the cutaways on some of those shots was the best writing and editing in the whole thing for me. Because it would end on, occasionally those interviews ended on some wonderfully random sentences where like, it's just a very confusing commercial.
I love when she's like, I'm from Napa. I've only seen cyclists. Oh, that's a basketball player?
Son of a bitch, that's a football player?
What is in his shorts?
Yeah, stuff like that was spectacular.
Yeah, so very much highly recommended, I think, from all of us here.
Yeah, and watch 7 Days in Hell if you haven't.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. So,
speaking of recommendations,
yes,
Castlevania came out on Netflix.
So this was recommended just by numerous people who really loved it, and none of us love anime.
Like, I have a friend, we have a friend that actually worked on some of the animation for this, I believe, as well.
Oh, do we? I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's okay.
I wouldn't be as annoyed by Castlevania if I did like it. I mean, I hated that it was cut into – how freaking short are those episodes?
So this –
they're
this
all is, about like 25 minutes.
Yeah, they're short. This is Warren Ellis writes it, and it's based on the video game. And this is – Warren Ellis does this in comics too, but you can get away with it. It's all set up and then it just ends.
It does. It literally gets you to the point of like, okay, and then it stops. And I was like, this can't be the season end because you're only 4 episodes into this and they're only 20 minutes long each. You made a 1-hour movie.
Well, there's 4 episodes and like the first one is setting up Dracula. The second one sets up Trevor Belmont. The third one sets up the city and the bishop and all that. The fourth is the climax and also sets up Alucard.
I'd say it's really not the climax. It just sets up Alucard.
Yeah. And that's it. It just ends.
Yes. And then there should be the show then. Yeah.
You've set up your characters. We have our heroes. We have our villain. And now nothing.
Well, and I mean, I just finished catching myself up on Orange is the New Black. And I've just binge watched all these Netflix shows. And as everyone who does that knows, you spend a good portion of any Netflix binge fast forwarding through the 7-minute long intro song.
Yes.
So for Castlevania to only be an hour, 20 minutes,
yeah,
or hour,
it should be
a
movie.
It forced me to have credits and a title card 4 goddamn times just to get through that.
You know, it's funny, though. The first title card was kind of long, but the second, third, and fourth one are like a 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you hit that skip button, it takes you right back to the beginning of the title card. I'm like, I'm not skipping the title card. Yeah. I did it like 3 times. I'm like, fuck.
And it was just driving me nuts that I was sitting there. I mean, I was really watching it first going, I don't like anime. I'm going to sit down and watch this. I was so surprised by Voltron. I know I can like anime. Yeah. It's just very rare. I love Warren Ellis' writing. It does the infuriating things he does.
Yeah.
But as far as a take on Dracula, I dug it.
Yeah.
I have a soft spot for railing against massive organized religion, and this – God, Warren Ellis hates the church.
Yeah, that first episode, like Dracula just launching his pogrom of evil, I'm like, fuck, I'm on Dracula's side.
Well, and it does better than most shows. It does a great job of establishing a villain that is the villain. Dracula is the problem here.
Oh, yeah.
His minions are killing people indiscriminately. This is fucked. Alucard tells him, if you do this, you're not going to be able to stop it.
He loves putting people on stakes.
And yeah, like so he is the villain. But more than most shows that try to do this, I understand how he got there and why he snapped. You can't agree with what he did, and you understand that he has to be stopped now. But you understand how he became the villain.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for me, I wasn't really interested in any of the characters.
Yeah.
You know, I get the story for him, but there's something like a lot of the delivery felt slow or awkward, and I just couldn't get into it. I watched the first 2 episodes. I got a sense of the rhythm and tone. Yeah. I don't like the era. The animation's okay, but I really do not like anime itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I read the synopsis for the last 2 episodes, okay, and I scanned through them, and I'd stopped at just a couple scenes to like get a feel for like what's going on there. But otherwise, I was like, I understand how this is playing out. I'm not interested.
The character I liked most was Dracula, and he's in the show least.
Yeah. I half watched the second and third episodes. I sort of was like watching and doing other stuff. The fourth episode has some great action sequences. When they decide to take on the vampires in their town, when they have, you know, has the crazy whip and he has the witch and all that kind of stuff. There's some good action in there. It's still nowhere near as good as any given episode of Voltron.
And if they release the rest of the season, it'd be great.
I don't know if I'm going to watch anymore.
Oh man, I wouldn't pick.
I assume there's got to be like 4 or 6 more of season 1 to make a coherent story.
They said have been picked up for season 2.
No, the rest of season 1.
No, sorry, it's season 2.
We're just going to jump All right. 1 year later, Dracula's dead.
Here's the funny thing. Castlevania Season 2 is going to start with a half hour previously on Castlevania.
I just feel like this was like pitched like as a weird like,
yeah.
Fine, we'll give you 4 episodes. See what you can do with it. And well, it's like nothing.
You know what's utterly frustrating about this, unless you will share this frustration, is G.I. Joe Resolute was also 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
And Warren Ellis wrote that, and it was great.
It really raised the bar on what I expected from this, and I think that probably suffered from it. plus, Adi Shankar, I want this guy to do more stuff. I really like his ideas. I hate the execution of this, though.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about Preacher, which has now done its first 4 episodes of its road trip season. I believe that's what they're calling it.
Yep.
Yep.
And we've moved out of the little Texas town of Anvil, which actually doesn't really happen too much in the comics itself. This is kind of where the comics picked up.
We're finally at the start of the show, kind of?
None of this happens in the comics. They have divorced themselves utterly from the comics.
They've made some interesting, sometimes frustrating, but sometimes really interesting deviations in this show. And I find myself, like Randy said, I don't know if you said this on mic, maybe you didn't, going back and forth about, like, what do I think about this show? Because at times, it is brilliant. They have some amazing action sequences.
And they do some bonkers shit. Like, they do things on TV that I didn't think anybody would do.
And I love Cassidy. The actor they play, that they cast for Cassidy, I just adore what he's doing.
Yeah, Cassidy's great.
And I will watch Ruth Negga through the end of, to the end of the earth.
I think until the end of the world.
Yeah, until the end of the world.
Like, I think Ruth Negga is great. I think their Tulip is completely different from the comics version.
Yes.
And I think that's for the better. I think they've really nailed their... Tulip.
Does this mean you guys don't like Jesse Custer?
That's their problem. Jesse Custer had a very distinctive in the comics.
He's the most boring of the three.
He's
right
not
now.
Jesse from the comics.
Yeah, in the comics, he's a very distinctive macho guy, and he's kind of an asshole. And I think he would have been problematic. I understand why they changed him, but in changing him, they made him boring.
He's kind of a wuss.
Yeah,
I mean, like through the whole first season, you're just kind of watching Jesse just take it. Like, God, man, Jesus, come on.
Yeah,
like Jesse Custer kicks the shit out of half of the population of that comic,
and they like to do it. Like they show him doing action scenes where he beats up like 6 or 8 people, but
then he's milquetoast.
But they missed the other part of a personality being like that.
I feel like they're starting to escalate him here. He's being a little bit more quick to get in a brawl, to be confrontational, to throw a drink at someone.
Yeah.
His overnight in New Orleans and then the whole day of telling Cassidy, Tulip's mad at me, Tulip's run off before, Tulip can take care of herself, shut the fuck up about it. Mm. That was closer to Jesse for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
He still doesn't have the super mullet, but
he's got to own the mullet.
I do think The Saint of Killers, I was a little disappointed in.
I don't know because, that was in the second episode where, it was in the
first episode has the big shootout with the cops.
The first episode has the big shootout. I thought they tried to do some music sequence, like music video at the beginning, which just
cut to a weird 70s grain film. Like they do
for
fake,
no reason.
They do fake film grain over it.
For no reason.
And this is an issue I have with Goldberg and Seth
Rogen.
Rogen.
Yeah.
Where there's moments of like, get your tongue out of your cheek.
Yeah. Take this seriously.
Take this seriously.
And I understand that Preacher was a over the top thing, but Ennis had some sincere, the theme was about friendship and loyalty. That's his theme. That's what he plays with. The theme here seems to be, look how goofy this all is.
Yeah. Now, I was trying to think back. My issues with this show through the whole first season was that they kept kind of trying to land in the right spot by not going through the path they ought to go.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't stay in Anvil like that. They don't. I mean, they took a lot of side stories that make the comic charming but aren't really necessary, but fans would be pissed if you – like Arseface and Quincannon. If you completely dropped those, I think fans would have freaked out. But they weren't really integral. And then they – kind of tried to make them integral, which changed them somewhat. And then you end up with what we all thought was going to be season two, starting where the comic really starts. They're finally on the fucking road.
And it's not that either.
It's not.
I kind of like that it's not slavish to the comic because I'm at least presented with something new here that I can experience alongside any other viewer.
Yeah. I wish I hadn't read it at this point.
It's rough that you're going to be constantly playing the comparison game.
It does seem like everyone who's loving this show has not read the comic.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing is that less than I think to talk about this off mic is that it's like they've taken the characters we like and they've gotten either close or they've, or in the case of Cassidy, they've nailed it and they're doing a different story with them.
I was trying to think in the first couple episodes of this season what was comic and what was not and how we, you know, where are they deviating and how far off are we? And it was infuriating. I couldn't track it.
I had
to just stop. And that's the moment where I started really enjoying what I love about the show. Because like you said, there are things that are great about it. The things that were infuriating me were where I was trying to hold it up to the comic. And once I let go of, like, if I want to go read Preacher, go read Preacher. This is all those same characters done a little different. This is a slightly different iteration. I will say that all the stuff in the car, the literal scenes in the car, were boring as fuck.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how they took a road trip and just made them. I mean, I know partly that was the joke that they were having these, like, come on, Eileen conversations, but they were genuinely boring. Like, the way they were shot looked laugh track sitcom boring.
It seems to me like Rogan and Goldberg and Sam Catlin, the people who are running the show, that they looked at Preacher, the comic, and said, wow, there's stuff in that comic I've never seen before. Let's do stuff on TV nobody's ever seen before. And sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's like, tell a fucking story instead of showing us stuff that you think is funny. Don't just take your dick out. That's not funny.
Well, they have a lot of subversive stuff that I appreciate coming from them.
Yeah.
When they have the hotel that has the basic NRA equivalent meeting.
That was funny. That was funny.
They had – because – we, the viewer, now know that they were there just so we could watch a bunch of NRA gun nuts get shot the fuck
by the Santa Fe. What can't guns do?
Yeah, that was funny as hell.
To have Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, two Jewish guys.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Really want to show Hitler in hell and then
make him sympathetic.
Try to make him sympathetic to the audience for a little bit is so hilarious to me that eventually you're going, wait, they're going to kick the shit out of him? And then you got to go,
and then they straight
kick the shit out.
Because my heart broke. That's the maddest I've been at that show was when Eugene kicks him.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I genuinely thought this is where Eugene's going to get himself, like, thrown out of hell or something, because Eugene is such the sweet, pure innocent that he would stand up for Hitler in hell.
But Hitler kind of gave him a look like he wanted him to kick him.
Yeah, I just – it still broke my heart. When Eugene looked at the camera and was like, all right, I'll bootlick.
I think my favorite part of the show, and this is a weird sentence, nobody take this out of context for their ringtone, is the stuff with Hitler. I think it's the funniest.
It's so weird.
I can't believe you guys are doing this. And I don't know where it's going anywhere, which is the problem with everything in Preacher. It's like, this is a fun bit. Do you have any points to make? Are you just thinking no one believes we're going to put Hitler in our show?
Whatever's going on with Cassidy's friend Dennis.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like, I love that there's no explanation and Cassidy will never tell you, but he's clearly lying about most things.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, but Cassidy's also like 600 years old.
And yes, exactly.
Yeah. So there could have been a really good Dennis.
I'm sure at some point we'll get the story on how he burned Dennis like 40 or 50 years ago. And Dennis
is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. And still speaks French. Doesn't understand a word of it. Oh yeah. That's all French.
I like the Mumbai Sky Tower episode. All the stuff with the angel.
The angel guy, them doing drugs.
Yes.
Him getting murdered.
That was super fun.
Yep.
That's the thing. I go through this whole – every episode, I go through it, and my reaction to literally everything is, what the fuck? And sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's bad.
Yeah.
The moment in hell with Hitler is when the show changed for me from, like, okay, I'm going to just stop thinking about the comic and I'm just going to enjoy this as its own TV show on its own terms, because Eugene being in hell is the largest, you can't take that back, change from the comic book. Because it's not just like, oh, you had a character go to point A instead of point B. You change the mechanics of how his power works. He makes you do things. And more than that, he makes you want to do things. So if Custer says, drink your iced tea, it's not just that you physically have to do it. It's the only thought you really want to do in your brain. Like, you want to do it. And Eugene can't go to hell. I don't care how bad you want to.
Yeah.
You can't walk there.
Yeah.
So how the fuck did he get there?
Yeah.
And that makes no – they're going to have to explain that later. But it's a fundamental change in the mechanics of how Genesis works from the comic.
Yeah.
And it's – I mean, I guess if you have an omnipotent power, it's fine to expand it out. But there were rules.
They're also doing something weird with this idea of what is in heaven right now, or yeah. what is in hell. Like, hell is falling apart. It's not working very mm-hmm. well. Yeah. It's overcrowded.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, who's properly being the puppet master, but at the same time, heaven, who's up there?
Who's running heaven?
One change I do like that they've made so far, and it seems like that we may not get the humpity-doo descendant of Jesus, which was a funny joke but probably doesn't need to be in there. I think that the bad guy organization, Star and those guys.
Yeah, the Grail.
The Grail. It seems like the Grail knows God is missing, and they're tying them more directly into that, and I think that's actually a good change.
Yeah, it's not going to be so disconnected.
Also, we haven't seen a lot of him. I like their Star, and I like their Featherstone, and I think, was that
– That's Malcolm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
that's
Malcolm. Is it Malcolm Goodwill?
Barrett?
Barrett.
Malcolm
yes.
Barrett as not Featherstone, but what's the other guy?
Boyd.
Is it Boyd?
I think he's Boyd.
Yeah.
Who, oh God, ends up counting sand on a beach.
I don't know if they're going to go that way, but do that, I can but definitely Jesus. See it.
Yeah, there's – the stuff in hell shouldn't have been there at all, and so when the stuff in hell ended up being scenes I really loved, that's kind of when it won me over on yeah. it breaking from the comic.
Yeah.
And then it's allowed them – once I liked that, it allowed me to let them go off on different stuff, like not quite having the angels do what they do in the comics. He doesn't go off to a Vegas kill me a bunch of times act.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still assuming we're going to get those guys reunited at some point, the angels.
No, he got shot by the Saint of Killers.
Yeah, he's done.
He's dead. There's no wound from the Saint of Killers is anything but fatal.
Wouldn't he be in hell?
No, I think they're gone.
Done. He didn't reappear.
I thought him getting a bullet from the Saint of Killers sent him to hell, and I figured that's where he's going to run into Eugene. And that's
I think it just makes him not appear.
Maybe, but I think they're both gone.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting that I don't know if I'm going to keep watching it, but there's just enough stuff that made me watch. Because, like I say, they're making up almost – like 90% of this is whole cloth.
A lot of my frustrations from season one about how restless it seemed in that city and how yeah. impotent Jesse seemed
mm-hmm. yeah.
are a little bit better in this. And so I'm actually pretty interested in where this is going.
It is moving better than it did in season one. I'll definitely give it that.
I was trying to remember back in the comic of how exactly they find God. And it seems from... And it's been a really long time since I've read the comic, but it seems that they kind of meander around and do a bunch of stuff. And basically, Jesse just has Genesis long enough that God starts finding him.
Yeah, that's more or less what happens.
They run into him in the bar.
Well, God basically tells him, like, stop looking for me.
Yeah, like, he doesn't so much find God as he just has this power he's not supposed to have to the point that God pulls him aside or comes and finds him.
Well, I miss a couple things. I miss John Wayne.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a big miss. And I miss – they start off – the graphic novel Preacher, the series of Preacher, starts off introducing all the characters and has a serial killer plot. And that's fine. The volume one is fine. Volume two, which is now all in volume one, has the story of Jesse's backstory and him and Tulip. And we see why
they split up. We've seen a flashback to Jody already.
And we put them together. And I saw how much their relationship and their romance was a part of the story. And they have not earned that here. And so I'm not as invested in the story.
I'm definitely not invested in those two characters together, Jesse and Tulip.
No, don't care.
No, and they have to establish that soon or you're not going to have anything for Cassidy to – Cassidy has a crush on Tulip and there's no tension there.
Although they've already slept together, so they've already fucked that up too.
Yeah, they're kind of hooking up, but is it just no chemistry there? Or?
I think there's no chemistry. But I don't think
they're given scenes to show chemistry.
It's Dominic Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
He was great as young Tony Stark. I don't understand how he's so lifeless as Jesse. I think it's the writing.
He was great in. I think he's a fantastic actor.
I think it's the writing.
This was a whole problem in the first season. It was not him that made Jesse Custer a lame, weak.
No, he was made an impotent character.
Yeah, yeah. And they need to fix that. They need to make a hard right on him and just have him throwing fists and just being angry about fucking
everything. He's already
fist
fighting more. I'm definitely going to watch the rest of season two simply because I like the changes they're making to make the search for God more concise.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like how they're going after it, and I'm eager to see how exactly Arseface walks out of hell, because didn't Cassidy see – there was some while Cassidy was watching the TV show that showed him the Great Ganesh or whatever the angel's name is, there was an ad for something that I would have sworn was Arseface. Or somebody mentioned something about like a singer, and you won't believe. Maybe they were talking about that act, and I was just thinking Arseface. But then they cut immediately to a scene of Eugene in hell, and he's got to come out and have a singing career. Yeah. He's got to.
Yeah,
they've got to get him out of hell and do that.
Although I don't know, they really maybe they'll never pay it off. They do not seem beholden at all to any of the comic.
They swung down to New Orleans. They happened in the comic. They're kind of touring around like
yeah,
that.
But they didn't. What they did in New Orleans was not anything they did.
They
in
run
New Orleans.
Into the underground vampire cult, right?
Yeah,
and they might do that.
And I think I don't know
Dennis.
I think the thing that's going on is that Preacher was of its time, and so I think they might
we're not
going to
see a Bill Hicks cameo.
There's no Bill Hicks. There's no. And the thing is, that's what made it work. Like making fun of the Lestat vampires. That's a different thing now, and I feel like maybe they were just like, you know what? We can't do what they did because it was of its time. So we've got to basically try to capture the anarchic spirit of it and maybe get the characters, but we've got to do our own thing. And unfortunately, I don't think it works.
When they go to see God, though, and it's the dog and the lady.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that was funny. When they do weird stuff, sometimes when they dick their dick out, it's funny.
Well, and then Cassidy pulls the wad of cash up. Like, I'm paying the man. are we not? Yeah.
We're down here. Let's do
again, this. I would watch an all Cassidy show.
Cassidy's the biggest reason to watch the show.
All right, guys. Well, I think we'll have to do a check-in on this show in a little bit later down the line. Or if you guys drop off, maybe I'll just stick with it and see what I think.
I'll be watching.
But until next week, I know we're going to have a bunch more shows next week. I'm sure there's more I have to binge right away.
Just keep going, this TV thing?
It never ends.
Yeah, unlike Castlevania, there's more episodes.
Yeah. But listeners, we want to thank you guys for tuning in. Hey, if you guys are patrons, stick around and check out our review of Spider-Man Homecoming. We are excited to talk about that.
Yep.
And otherwise, until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.